put down your blasters and prepare for the Jedi to end. This is the Imperial Senate Podcast. I'm your co-host, Charlie Ashbean, and with me, as always, are my friends, Nikki and Kristen. How's it going, guys?
Hey!
Things are... You seem wrong. Yeah?
So how's...
Everything's going great.
Everything's going up your way, yeah? Is that a phrase?
Yeah, have I made so that far.
Up? Coming up Milhouse?
Yeah, everything's coming up Milhouse, alright? Okay, this is fun.
Nikki, what have you been up to?
Hey, yeah, nothing too much. Just hanging around, going to schools, because I sub for classes now. But yeah, it's pretty cool, because we got some Rebels. We're going to finish off this whole show very soon. And yeah, that's kind of occupying all my thought. It's weird.
For a moment there, I legit thought you were going to sing the lyrics to A Thousand Miles.
Oh, what?
You're like, waking my...
How do the lyrics go, downtown. Charlie? Like,
okay, wait, are you going to sing? Like,
that's our other show.
She doesn't really talk about rebels in that song. But yeah.
You should look that up. That'll be our next podcast.
Yes, the Vanessa Colton podcast.
Huge fan.
What about you, Kristen?
Well, depending on when we edit this and get this podcast out, I would have applied for grad school. Mm-hmm. So I need all of the, I don't know, Jedi force persuasion shit that can come my way so I can get more in debt. But also get smarter.
I'm sorry, the Jedi can't do that. It wasn't in the original trilogy. Kristen, sorry.
Too bad. I'll make it canon now.
I'll make it canon.
Make it so.
Oh, great Star Wars quote.
But yeah, other than that, been good. Been having my regular bowel movements, so that's good too.
What about you, Nikki? How's your bowel movements been?
You know, it's on and off, yeah. Trying to regulate. You know how it is.
Yeah, getting back into that grind of literally. Regular bowel movements. Yeah, literally. The holidays, you know, they mess it up.
Grind all that, you know, bad stuff out.
Ooh, if we ever get somebody that we can advertise for, maybe we could do it for, like, constipation pills or something like that. So, whoever's listening and wants to advertise with us, we can talk about poopsies.
Looking at you, Dulcolax.
Go, Dulcolax, sponsor our podcast.
That sweet poop money.
Give us poop money.
Everybody does it.
Spoop plugging poop. I love it.
That's my name. Don't wear it out.
Well, I've basically just been... Oh, wow, my voice has gone very strange.
Wow.
I think I'm getting ill gradually throughout this episode. You guys take over for a second.
So how did we feel about the Han Solo trailer?
Ooh, it was very nice, actually. I don't know, it was kind of surprising, actually. I wasn't expecting it to look the way it did, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I really liked the music in it, like the electric guitar. I thought that was such a really nice Han Solo-esque, like, salute. Mm-hmm. Especially to, like, his younger years. So that was really cool, listening to that.
Yeah, I love the way the music lines up with the with Leet and Lando, like, doing the salute and then firing up the old hyperdrive-looking thing.
The old hyperdrive.
Yeah, no.
Fire it up, boys.
That was the good stuff.
I think for me, it looked very visually like a prequel film.
I mean, interesting.
It is a prequel.
I mean, it is a prequel film, but like technically.
It felt like a very George film. And I think that after Rogue One, both the standalones feel very George-like to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I dig it. I mean, to be fair, like, this film was basically, like, thought of by George, like, originally, like, as a concept. Just a Han Solo film. So I'm not really surprised, and, you know, got, like, Kasdan involved, but it looks fun, and that's what I think I like about it the most. Because, like, the prequels, in a way, are sort of, even though the Anakin story, we get to see the beginnings of Luke and Leia. Like, we literally see the beginning when they pop out of Batman.
And yike.
Now we get to see, like, the beginning of Han, and I think that's really cool, because this is a character I really like, I really care about. I feel like, you've seen the film, obviously, like, he's joining up for, like, Imperial enlistment, and I feel like the history and the background, sort of, it, not only did it help push the character we know in A New Hope, it also pushes him in The Force Awakens, and reflects on his relationship with Finn a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm okay with this film being really light and funny, hopefully. I think not necessarily like, you know, like just a pure sitcom comedy, like Seinfeld meets Han Solo or something like that. But just, you know, it being a little bit more quirky than, you know, Rogue One and The Last Jedi and even The Force Awakens, because I really can't see Han Solo being so incredibly serious. He's just very sarcastic. And so I like the idea of this being sort of an upbeat, sarcastic film, hopefully through like the eyes of Han Solo, just him not taking anything seriously, especially at the end where he's in the Millennium Falcon and he's escaping one of the Imperial starships. And he's just like, see, we're fine. Everything's fine. Like that lightheartedness. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, like, a lot of people said, oh, he doesn't sound like Han. And I was like, well, what do you mean by that? Like, does he sound like Harrison Ford?
They mean.
Really? But, yeah. But, like, does he have to? I don't want an impersonator.
Yeah.
I want someone who takes that character of Han and what he means and represents that. And for me personally, you see that in that sequence you just talked about, Kristen, which is, like, I was, like, sent straight back to that scene in the Death Star. With the,
yeah,
we're fine here, how are you? Like, he's funny. Like,
yeah, even in, like, high-stress situations, you know, they're on the Death Star, they're trying to rescue this princess who's going to die, and if they get caught, they're going to die. And he's just cutting up and saying, you know, just flying by the seat of his pants, almost as if he's drunk throughout the entire thing. And I love that.
Yeah, like, people always think, oh, he's the badass, like, he's so smart and, like, the coolest guy. But this is the same dude that, like, ran through the Death Star, which is, like, the biggest military weapon in the galaxy I've ever seen, like, screaming.
Trying to scare them. Yeah, exactly. Like, this is the same guy that escaped the First Order Rathtar thing by jumping at light speed immediately. And, like, I watched The Force Awakens again the other day, and so, when Rey and Finn are like, how are you going to get out of here? Or they say something along those lines. And then Han Solo is like, I never ask that until after I've done it.
Exactly.
So it's Han Solo is just a guy that's faking it till he's making it. He's flying by the seat of his pants. And I think the standalone film should reflect that. It shouldn't be so 100% serious. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he's aware of that, right? Because there's the part in the trailer I really like where it's after Kira talks about how she's like the only person who knows what he really is, and he's like, yeah, what's that? And then he drops the smile and he starts looking like slightly concerned. And like that sort of insecurity of Han Solo, just the I'm gonna try to look like I know what's going on, we're all fine, but actually I'm freaking out inside because I have no idea what I'm really doing.
Yeah, exactly, like he wants to be on top of everything, but you know, he's just an average dude trying to make his way. Was there anything you saw in the trailer that surprised you?
That's a good question. I was really surprised about how turned on I was when Lando Calrissian came on screen. I was really surprised about that.
So, how much did you think you'd be turned on originally? As opposed to...
Well, from a scale of 1 to 10, I was like, well, I'm definitely going to be turned on... 10 out of 10.
Okay.
But then when the trailer dropped, I realized, oh no, I was wrong. It's actually 13 out of 10. And so it was a lot to handle. And so I had to like walk away for a little bit, you know, take a cold shower. Yeah. Yeah. Have a glass of water and then come back to it. So I was very surprised about that.
I think like the biggest thing for me was not really anything in like a scene in particular. I guess the sort of like space monster with the tentacles was kind of the like craziest thing, but I think just in
Yeah.
general the cinematography was surprising to me. Like I wasn't expecting it to look the way it did. And it looks awesome, right? Like I think a lot of people, especially that like Super Bowl trailer, I felt looked a little it seemed a little more like grimy and like dirty and sort of down to the Corellian Earth. And I think I wasn't really expecting that from the movie, and that was kind of surprising.
Yeah, I think it like the way they show the galaxy and like class systems is really cool. Like they reflect it in the actual designs of stuff, and I think that's what George tried to do with the prequels, and I think he succeeded. But other people didn't think, like everyone said, "Oh, everything's shiny." It's like, well, yeah, because most of it was in the rich planets, and when you saw like the ground to the ground basics of like army ships and stuff, they weren't that shiny. It was, like it's a really good way of showing class. Like you look at the Millennium Falcon and you look at it from the original trilogy. That's been through a bunch of shite, right?
Yeah, literally.
Like it's not as clean as it used to be, but these ships actually sold like that. And you can imagine the Falcon's really expensive. And you see like characters like Kira, who obviously grew up with Han on this like sort of rough planet, and she gets to the point where she gets to wear like expensive dresses and outfits and live in this like socialite life, but deep down sometimes you still like where your roots are basically. And I like that concept. I like that we're expressing class through Star Wars.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I really liked seeing the inside of the Millennium Falcon and seeing how clean it was, like you were talking about earlier, Charlie. And it parallels so much to in Episode 5, Empire Strikes Back, when Lando sees the Millennium Falcon for the first time after Han won it, and Lando's like, "What did you do to my ship?" And so you don't realize sort of what that means until you see the inside of the Millennium Falcon. You're like, "Oh shit, Han, what did you do to
Yeah,
his ship?"
that this movie is just gonna make that scene like so much more loaded. Like every single line is gonna have just like way more meaning down to like, "Hey Chewbacca, you still hanging out with that loser?" You know, just sort of all of
Yeah,
the
yeah.
just knowing what they experienced when they were younger and sort of seeing each other again. It's all gonna change the way we see that relationship, which is really a fun relationship, a weird relationship, I guess, but also fun. He does get
Yeah.
sold out. Actually, no, Lando did the right thing. We all know he did.
Look,
Sure.
he was protecting a whole city
It's
as
true.
opposed to one dude.
It's true.
How did he even get into that city in a political atmosphere in the first place? Like, did he win it in a bet, or did he just go into politics and decide to do the right thing after the events of Solo, a Star Wars film? I don't know. These are the questions that I want answered.
Well, we know that the Rebels episodes take place after Solo, and he's interested in like selling off for gas and mining stuff. So I just imagine you're right. Like he's working his way up the system and selling off that gas to the highest bidder, and then Cloud City is a big mining colony for Tabana gas.
Yeah.
So it's a really good sort of,
Traded a few puffer
idea.
pigs.
I hope we see Puffer Pig. That'd be cool.
Puffer pigs forever.
So we're talking about Solo. StarWars.com also released some details about lots of the time material we're gonna see, including a new novel called Last Shot, which I think is the most interesting out of all the books they like sort of released, because not only is it a story that will be told about like the pre and post Solo Han and Lando, but particularly post Return of the Jedi and like the New Republic. What do you guys think about this book?
Hello, Ren. Or Ben.
Baby Ben.
Baby
Yeah,
Ben.
the best detail I saw was that I think it was the writer of the book tweeted out about, I think Ben's got like a nickname for Lando, Uncle One, I think it was, or something like that, which I love. I like the idea that, you know, like, he's a little kid, he's hanging out with his uncle, and then, you know, he has, like, he's an evil psychopath, but it's the memories that matter.
It's the memories. I will say this. I've been a secret shipper of this particular couple for a long time. I love Han and Leia to pieces. They're great. But I'm just kind of wondering how things would have turned out if Leia and Lando got together. And sort of like, you know, what would have changed? What would have happened? Because Lando is very, he has that smuggler side to him, but he has transitioned into this political type of atmosphere. So I can only imagine the type of support that Leia would have received from the political side of things, with Lando by her side, and vice versa. Leia's very intelligent and smart, and she's very badass. Like, if her and Lando had to do smuggling missions or, like, work behind the back of, you know, the Empire or whatever to defeat them, like, what they could accomplish together. So I know this is, like, super weird because Lando did betray them, but he did it for the good of Cloud City, but he figured out how corrupt Vader truly was, and he did the right thing afterwards. But I'm just, I've always kept in the back of my head, like, you know, what if, you know, Leia and Han just kind of split off before they got married and had Ben or whatever. What if they just split off and then her and Lando just teamed up and, like, got together and fell in love?
Or after, and Ben, Orlando is Ben's stepdad. Now that would be, what that'd a great be some family dynamics right there. Now, yeah, actually, I think going off your political point, I think Lando would has the potential to be, like, a really good chief of staff for, like, a politician. Because if you need, yeah, you need someone to, like, yeah, schmooze a little, get a little, you know, encourage people to do what you want them to do, I think Lando could, Lando would really be quite good at that.
See, I think yes, that I don't think it would work. And I think the reason is because Leia, like, at the end of the day, doesn't want to be completely dragged into, like, the political realm. And I think that's why she likes Han so much, is because he has that other edge and drags, like, the sort of, you know, casual, like, ordinary side to her, basically. And
yeah, but he's always gone.
True, but I feel like...
Was that Lando... talked about in Bloodline? Like...
Yeah, what, like, he's helping out with, like, this racing thing, because he really misses flying and smuggling. And so, like, he goes back to do that right, while Leia is helping out with the New Republic.
I mean, the...
And they talk via HoloNet or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, like, more specifically, like, the relationship. Like, it, sort of the opposite nature of them is what sort of keeps Leia honest in, like, some ways. Was that talked about?
I mean, I guess. Probably. I need to reread the book. But
well, it's like in Empire where, you know, like, there is a certain charm with that smuggler, you know, like... She does like the scoundrel.
Totally.
Like, I don't think she would work well. She just ended up with some other, you know, like, rich politician dude. And I know Lando isn't a politician dude, but I feel like he would either, one, be too good at it, and two, he would definitely, like, there'd be a billboard on Cloud City saying, like, come to Cloud City, home of, like, Leia Organa. Like, he'd just use it somehow.
Marketing.
Exactly. I think that Leia would be like, off.
See, course, that's why he'd be a good staffer. You know, he can exactly, he could get that. Get that.
Maybe he could have just been Leia's side piece. You know,
oh, wow.
A little bit of side action in bed while Han Solo was gone.
This adds a whole lot of meaning to the title "Last Shot" now.
Ba bam, kablamo! There it is.
Who got it?
Got it. Hot off the press. I don't know. I feel like Han was never supportive of Leia. I don't know where this is coming from.
You hate Han and Leia, man.
I don't hate them. I love it. And I love their relationship in the original trilogy. And I hate that they grew apart And, you know, in The Force Awakens, when they finally reunite, you know, they're fine. And they say that, you know, oh, I just went back to what I did best. And I guess that's just not a good enough excuse. I don't know. Anyway, I'm excited for these books that are coming out for the tie-in material for Solo, a Star Wars film.
Backtracking.
Backtracking. If you agree with me, let me know so I know I'm not the only one.
Yeah, I feel like obviously, like with the last shot, though, the most important thing I'm interested in is the whole dynamic of. I always like when stories like interact with like the past, so you're telling two stories at the same time. But the fact that we get to see a new story with the Han and sort of Lando we know, and the young Han and Lando that we're going to be introduced into is kind of cool. We've also got another one called Most Wanted, which is about Kira and Han on Corellia growing up, which I feel like would be a good sort of backstory for those characters. You know, obviously we've got the sort of same sort of books we get every year, like the Art of Book, the official guide, which will always be good, pointing fingers, etc. There's lots of really cool books for kids as well. There's one of those books where you know you press the button and then someone talks.
Ooh.
They're great.
Oh, that's my favorite book. Hell yeah.
Yeah, we got one for The Last Jedi, and it's awesome. Like you have to press it three different buttons and it comes up with a different voice quote. Which is good. If you want to hear Oscar Isaac talk to you while you go to sleep, which I guess is everyone. And one of the kids' books I think looks really good is they've adapted the Chewbacca arc from the Marvel Comics. I don't know if you remember that sort of mini series.
Right.
And it's been adapted as. One second. The book is going to be called. I'll find out.
Yeah, I
The
never.
book is called Chewbacca 2, Electric
It
Boogaloo.
is. No, it's. It's called Chewie and the Courageous Kid. And I really like this that comic. I know a lot of people didn't like
Yeah, I
it,
never
but.
read it.
It was nice. It was like a fun little story with Chewie, and like showed how much he means as a character. Like he's not just the sidekick; he's a living, breathing dude. And also, it retconned the fact that Chewie did get the medal. So there you go.
Nice.
Chewie is like so important and so vital to not only the original trilogy, but like the events of The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. Like he is the,
MVP.
yeah, he is the butter that is holding the Star Wars galaxy
Chewy
together.
forever. Chewy is
Chewie
butter.
forever. He is the gorilla glue that is holding the Star Wars galaxy together.
That's
And that's my
beautiful.
answer, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, I guess like one of the most interesting things we get to see with this like release of books as well is that we're getting a new comic from Marvel about young Lando. And I adored the Lando miniseries. But just to see that, you know, Donald Glover sort of design is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. That's gonna be so cool.
And yeah, any story of Lando is always going to be like, sort of, I'm in. Like, you don't really have to sell me that much. But yeah,
It could be a story about Lando going to the bathroom, and I would buy that shit up. I'd snatch it.
What would happen in that, in the bathroom, Kristen?
Okay, picture this
Okay.
scene. Lando Calrissian. He's playing some sabacc or whatever it's called.
On his
He's
iPhone.
playing a Star Wars card game of some sort, and then suddenly his stomach is making the rumblies because, backtrack, a little memory that he's having. Oh no, he ate too much spicy Star Wars food, and it's making his stomach rumble. So he goes into the bathroom, locks himself in, gives him some time to like chill out, and then he just lets it go. Like the most epic of bathroom breaks of all time. It's just coming out every orifice. It's nasty, it's dangerous, but he gets himself all cleaned up, and just as he's about to flush, there's a knock on the other side of the door. And Lando's like, 1 minute. And the person on the other door say, "Hey, what are you doing in there? The toilet's broken." And then panic fills Lando's face. And he's like, oh, I'm just powdering my nose. I'll be out in a second. And now he's trying to figure out, oh, crap, how do I escape this? Because he went in the toilet and it's not working. And so that was comic book issue number one. Stay tuned for what happens in comic book issue number two.
So he drops a spice crate at the last minute.
Story brought to you by Dulcolax. Regulate your bowels.
If you're not regulating your bowels, you're dead to me.
Also, like,
Dulcolax.
He totally uses cape as some loo roll.
Is that why he has so many?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. He would never do that to his wardrobe.
You know, the funny thing about your story, Kristen, when you were doing the Lando lines, I actually heard them as Billy Dee Williams.
You like, did? I'm so glad.
Just a second here. Let me powder my nose.
I'm just powdering my nose.
Hello, what have we here?
That's after he drops a spice crate.
That was too close.
He takes a picture of it and sends it to Han. Check this out.
I'm a piece of junk.
Dulcolax.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I think the Lando comic, I never read the first one. Do you think they're going to connect the two at all?
No, I doubt it, because that's really, it's a self-contained story. I really recommend reading it, like picking up the trade paperback. It's a really good story about how Lando's trying to, like, he gets his crew together to steal from, like, this Imperial ship. It's supposed to be one of the Empire, one of the Emperor's, like, most important ships.
And is it the Eclipse?
It's not the Eclipse. It's the Scimitar.
Oh, okay. That does sound familiar.
And it has all, obviously it has all, like, dark side artifacts, which is the same thing he does in Battlefront 2. Like, he has different places and different, like, museums full of shit he just stole them. And yeah, it's a really cool look at that character, and you see how Lobot became the Lobot we know. But yeah, this is really cool. Like, we get to see a bit more of Lando in the Falcon, and how he, like, I like how we sort of associate this new design with him, because it feels like a very Lando-esque Falcon as opposed to the one we see with Han. Like, they both represent those characters really well.
I agree. Speaking of characters, let's talk about Star Wars Rebels.
Ooh, let's do that. So, last week, Star Wars Rebels came back, obviously with two episodes. This week, we're recording on the Monday, so... No, we're not. What am I talking about? It came out on the Monday.
What day is it? I think it's Tuesday?
Tuesday/Wednesday.
Tuesday/Wednesday.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And... What an episode they were. Like, what a bunch of episodes. Just together.
I am shooketh.
Take a deep breath before we get into this stuff. By the way, if you haven't listened to... If you haven't watched Star Wars Rebels...
What are you doing with your life?
Yeah, what are you doing, man, buddy?
Do we have any questions first that were submitted to us via email?
We do have questions, but we should wait until we discuss it, I think, because a few of them are a bit spoilery.
Okay, I see.
And, like, if we might discuss stuff that they might ask anyway. So, Kanan.
Rest in power.
I don't...
What did you think when you saw that scene?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Nikki,
go first.
The pain. The suffering. It was very Yoda Order 66 in my little viewing session. I mean, it's sort of like, it's hard to be super shocked, right? Like, anybody who really, like, tried to think about it probably could have assumed that this was a possibility, that this was on the horizon. I think thinking about the episode again after having watched it all, it's really sort of touching how Kanan takes the time to, like, sort of say his goodbyes.
Yeah.
I guess he doesn't really have The super big moment with Zeb, I guess maybe you could assume it happened off screen, but especially the sort of Ezra and Sabine, may the force be with you, kind of thing. That was very, it's a lot to handle in retrospect. But yeah, I think Kanan was one of my favorite characters, not just in Rebels, but in Star Wars. So sort of watching him go, but watching him go in like a classic Jedi way was both satisfying and, I won't say heartbreaking, because it is fake, but yeah, it definitely hit the feels on a maximum firepower.
I was really sad to see him go, but I think it was what the series was sort of building up to, you know, because he isn't anywhere in, like, throughout the original trilogy and Rogue One and things like that. And so even when General Syndulla's name was dropped in the film, I kind of thought, okay, you know, she makes it, but, you know, what else happens? So I sort of speculated that Kanan was going to go out in a blaze of glory, which he did.
Literally.
Literally. He literally went out in a blaze of glory. I really liked Caleb Boone. I really liked that his vision returned one last time so he could see Hera. And then sort of the afterword of that in Jedi Knight, when they're all trying to like figure out what the next step is and how this crew is going to move on. That was really cool to see. Hera is my favorite Star Wars Rebels character. There was a lot of sort of controversial stuff that came up on Twitter after Doom and after Jedi Knight, in the sense of, you know, there was that torture scene and she was drugged before she told Kanan that she loved him.
Yeah.
I have a couple of points with that. I think those are fair points. I'm not going to say, oh, you're wrong. But I do disagree with people saying that this was really bad or really wrong, in the sense that I'm okay with seeing women in Star Wars films and in any action film kind of experience the same type of discrepancy as men go through. Because, you know, Han Solo was tortured in Empire Strikes Back, and Luke Skywalker was almost electrocuted to death with Force Lightning in Return of the Jedi. And in A New Hope, when Leia is going to get, like, that truth serum from that probe droid, like, it's cut off. We don't see what happens. It's implied.
Yeah.
With Hera, we get to see a little bit of that, you know, suffering in the name of the rebellion. And to me, that was, you know, really cool to witness, you know, her standing strong, even in this moment. And Governor Price freaking hates her because Hera's done all this damage to the Empire, and especially the outpost on Lothal. So, I mean, Governor Price hates her. And now that she has her, or had her in her grasp, like, of course she's going to be absolutely horrible to her. And then Thrawn is pretty much mortal enemies with Hera. And so, you know, their meeting and what transpired there was super important. And maybe it's my thought process is different just because I watched Annihilation this past weekend. So I don't know. But I really liked Hera's strength through her torture. I didn't like that she was sort of used she was used to further Kanan.
Yeah.
In this show, I think to me, I don't know. I had my discrepancies with that, but other than that, I thought how Kanan went out and how that episode was done, I thought it was good. I thought the storytelling was good.
Yeah, I feel like for me, I would just add on to the bit you just said there about like the whole torture and stuff. Like, I understand people's point of views, and obviously, like, if you've been through that sort of thing, and like, the idea of like drugging someone and then them like the whole idea of like Hera finally saying I love you after that, even though I think that the show tried to make it clear that like she was starting to like get out of it, but it's not too clear that like a lot of people said that, so obviously it wasn't clear enough, and I think that is a problem. And yeah, like you said about the whole the agency and stuff, the whole relationship with Hera and Kanan, I always loved the idea that these two were together, and that's like the whole idea that they were in a relationship, and they just never spoke about it like out openly because we never saw it. Like there was those moments where they had conversations, like, you know, and Ezra like overheard them sometimes. And even in like a New Dawn, like, you see that sort of relationship starting to build, and like you got the cover with him and the beard, but then like in this episode, it's like what, they just never were together, and they've only just said this now. I was like, I don't know if that works because everything you've seen before just doesn't lead up to that.
It's like the slow build throughout four seasons, and then all of a sudden, at the very end, it's, you know, a kiss, and then, you know, an intimate moment, and then a confession of love, and then boom, that's it. Like, I am here for slow burns. I effing love slow burns. But, like, I just felt like it happened so quickly, just intimate moment after intimate moment. After four seasons of nothing, essentially, and then boom, Kanan's gone. And you're like, wait, what? And this whole, oh, I love you. And, you know, it's very convenient that she was able to get it out of her system before Kanan died.
Yeah, but even...
Spoiler.
But even more than that, it's like the idea that, well, they've just announced that they like each other. I was like, it doesn't seem realistic. It seems like they were together anyway. I find it, the idea that they never said that I love you or, you know, were in a relationship to be a bit unrealistic.
For sure. But at the end of the day, this is a kids' TV show. So it's...
True.
I mean, I'm not expecting, you know... I love Dave Filoni and I love Star Wars Rebels. I'm not expecting this to be some Emmy... like Breaking Bad type show. So of course there are going to be a little bit of discrepancies that I have. And I don't want to discount people who didn't like Hera's torture scene and didn't like her being drugged. Like, I don't want to say, you know, they're wrong for having that viewpoint, you know, especially people who have been in situations where they have been under the influence of drugs without them knowing. Like, I don't want to discount that at all. That's fair. That is a fair assessment.
Yeah,
I feel like, or
sorry,
go ahead.
You go first.
Okay. I was just gonna say with the love story, I feel like a lot of what you guys said is almost like by design. I feel like a lot of that relationship is supposed to be defined by regret and not taking the time to do this, not being so, you know, engrossed with the task at hand and like acknowledging more firmly whatever they had. I feel like that's sort of the point. I mean, that's how that sort of worked for me, all the way it all played out in this episode. And yeah, like you said, with the controversial stuff, it's what makes sort of telling these stories so hard, because every single person brings their own experiences to it, and you can't account for everything that people are gonna, you know, react to. And yeah, it like bums me out that some people out there were not able to enjoy it at all because it, you know, brought back some maybe nasty memories or experiences. But it is one of the sort of risks of storytelling.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just in terms of let me just say as well, like in terms of the actual death and stuff, for me personally, I was actually really moved. always just assume, like, you know, it's sad. Anytime a character dies, it's sad. But in this case, it was different. Like, I was really emotional, and it, like, really affected me. And I think it's because, like, with Kanan, this is, like, the first character of the new sort of era of Star Wars. And he's such a sort of a really interesting character and dynamic. Like, he's the, like, everyone kept saying, I think something someone put on Twitter and it really moved me, which was like, the death of the last Padawan. And I was like, oh god, that's really moving.
Ugh, crying.
And like, yeah, it's like, it's really, it's like a sweet sentiment, and like the idea that he connected these two, he's like, he was the bridge between these two worlds in a way. And like, Freddie Prinze Jr. does an amazing job anyway, but in these episodes in particular, it was like heartbreaking. Like, you said earlier, as soon as he said, may the force be with you, I was like, okay, shit, he's going. Yeah, and I actually,
yeah, I was loose.
I didn't cry, but I was like it really moved me, and it was kind of like a it didn't truly hit me. It hit me in the moment, but it didn't truly hit me until the second episode.
Mm-hmm.
Hera looks out,
yeah,
and Chopper holds her hand, and it was just beautifully done.
Right. I mean, like, that's the episode where everyone sort of finding their way to grapple with it, right? Like Jedi Knight ends right on, you know, the explosion, basically, and then Doom picks up with the sort of aftermath, right? And I feel like,
yeah,
that is sort of where all of it really starts to hit, because, yeah, you have, like, the adrenaline of watching him pull a Jean Grey from X-Men 2, and then, you know, that all that sort of bubbling up, and then sort of the white screen, and then you, like, start to take the time where everyone sort of goes in their own way, and it's rough. And I think back to that first, I think, like, it might have been the very first sort of footage of Rebels was the Cowboy Jedi, what's it called? Cowboy Jedi sort of featurette. I don't know if you guys remember that from, like, a super, it would have been like 2013, maybe 2014, early 2014. And that was like the first character introduced from the show. And just knowing where Kanan went, being blinded, you know, talking to Bendu, and all that journey is pretty nuts.
Hey, Nikki, you keep cutting out.
He's gone.
Did the call drop?
He's left.
Oh.
He's left this.
Oh no.
This world. Sorry, guys. Basically, what happened was an explosion just attacked us, and Nikki bravely sacrificed himself.
Whoa, that was weird.
You're back. He's a force ghost.
Thank Ezra.
Something trippy went on there. I don't know what happened. I got dropped from the call.
Down with it.
Yeah. Wow. Anyway, what was the last thing you heard from me? I maybe talked to myself for like another 20 seconds.
You became really patchy, and then you just sort of vanished.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry about that. Basically, what I was saying, I think the last thing I was saying was, I remember the Cowboy Jedi featurette that came out in, I guess it would have been like 2013, maybe early 2014, something like that.
Yeah.
And Kanan was the first character introduced to the show, and, you know, he went on a really crazy journey with Bendu and whatnot, and being blinded, and it's sad to see him go, because he was very much the dad of the show, right? And he had his own ups and downs. It was never, he never knew everything, and I think that's what made him a cool Jedi.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, he was still a Padawan himself. And it was interesting to see him grow along with Ezra. I think, yeah, that whole sort of concept of him, like, and it didn't feel quite, even though he obviously, like, he had this really cool death scene, it didn't feel quite like we had let him go yet. And then I think that the episode that aired on Monday this week was a nice way of saying goodbye to him finally, like letting him go. Let's just go straight into it, because, I mean, I think everyone wants us to talk about this whole little mini arc. The Lafour Temple.
What?
Yeah. I mean, I think I was thinking about this morning, like, Star Wars Rebels always gets really good, like, voice actors and, like, famous actors that, like, guest appear. And I thought it was really amazing that we got to hear Malcolm McDowell on the show, and nobody talked about it because so much stuff happened in it that getting, like, a really cool actor like Malcolm McDowell was, like, the least thing you could talk about.
Right.
This episode, these episodes, pretty cool, right?
They were giving off a crazy vibe, that's for sure.
Okay, so I'm just gonna go ahead and get this out here. I'm gonna spill my tea. I thought these episodes were really great. I really enjoyed the storytelling. I loved the idea of a world between worlds and like how that type of ability with the Force is now canon, and you can like walk amongst events that have already happened and that have yet to happen, and you can like change them.
Yeah.
I think that is such a cool concept. My beef that I have is I wish it would have focused more on the Rebels. I wish this show would have focused more on Hera and Thrawn. Maybe that'll happen in these final two episodes that are coming out next week. I wish it would have focused more on, you know, sort of like the Rebel Alliance and the Rebellion establishing themselves before the events of Rogue One. I felt, you know, through the first few seasons, it was really cool, like, seeing the Rebel Alliance kind of in action, building up, and then you had Hera, who's part of, you know, this really cool crew of, like, ragtag Rebels. I thought that was really cool, but then I started to feel, especially after the end of season two, that it was going, it was backtracking back into like focusing on Jedi lore and like the Force and things like that. And especially, you know, with season four and with the events with like Bindu and, you know, Kanan and Ezra sort of like growing to, with their Force powers, I felt like we started losing focus of the Rebellion, and, you know, characters like Sabine and Hera and Zeb sort of became background characters, and the focus became on Kanan and Ezra. And I love Filoni. I think he's a great storyteller, but I kind of felt like these episodes were him trying to finish what he wanted with the Clone Wars series. And so that's what I felt when I watched it. And I know that's like totally out there to say, but I really wished that we could have focused more on the Rebels and the Rebel Alliance as it was established throughout the first few seasons. You know, that's not to say that I didn't really enjoy these episodes. I loved what Filoni introduced into the Star Wars universe. I just felt like, you know, I was watching the Clone Wars series again, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. I feel like, okay, so a lot of people had this sort of same problem, and I think it's really interesting from my point of view, because it's kind of one I had with the second and third seasons, which was that I was like, I don't really care about the Force concept. Like, I do care about the Force concepts. I think they were good episodes, but like in terms of the show itself, I was really more interested in the episodes that dealt around the Rebellion.
Yeah.
But for season four, I feel like season four in particular, I felt like it done a really good job at focusing mainly on the Rebellion stories, and these two episodes like were basically the and the obviously the Worf stuff are the only sort of Force aspects. But I feel like it's ingrained with the actual Rebellion story. Like the whole idea is that these guys trying to save the Fall. And I think the Fall itself is a character in the show.
I can see that. That's a good point.
And I feel like it's so Fall-centric and like this strange planet that it has to be dealt with in certain ways. And like you said, these were two episodes, and then maybe if you count the Force Wolf stuff, a few couple more minutes, and maybe another episode if you count the one where they go through that portal. But we're getting an hour and a half movie, which deals with the battle and stuff. And so I feel like we've got enough of the actual battles and stuff to come afterwards that it was nice to have a sort of a quick breather and sort of delve into these different concepts. And I know people shit on Filoni a bit, and I don't blame them sometimes. I was I'm not quite sure, but I really did like these episodes in a way that I think it was interesting to have a different break. And I feel like it's nice to see the what the Emperor's doing firsthand, because there's only so much you can see, the Imperials on this planet, they're being evil, but in terms of them actually bastardizing this whole temple and the planet and the temple fighting back, I think that's a really interesting concept.
I enjoyed that a lot, and I have no beef with Filoni. I think he's a great storyteller. I just I wish this could have been a separate series in of itself. It could be Star Wars, The Emperor's Secret or something like that. 50 Shades of Sheev. I don't know. But if I think that could have been expanded upon more in a different series where it focused on the Jedi lore and it gave it a little bit more of the justice of what the Emperor was really doing. And then with Star Wars Rebels, we could focus on, the ragtag team of rebellion, of the rebellion, of people that are like you and me, who are trying to make a difference and trying to fight back against the Empire. And if there's a Force user or something like that in there, fine. But I think, and I'll draw this back to Rogue One, there wasn't a single Jedi in that film. I mean, yes, Chirrut was a Force user, or he channeled the Force, but he wasn't a Jedi. And it was such a successful film, and a lot of people say that Rogue One is their favorite. And it's, it's about this ragtag team of rebel fighters. And so, I don't know. Maybe I'm complaining just to complain. But I really wish that I could have seen more of that. I could have seen more of, Hera stepping up and fighting against Thrawn. I wish we could have seen more of Thrawn, especially when he was introduced in season 3, just to see that dynamic more, if that makes sense.
No, I get you completely. And I feel like, you're not wrong. I feel like we have to be careful of, what we delve into. But I also think as well, if you look at the season in the whole, and I feel like when we, if you get the Blu-ray and stuff, when you watch it back, it'll feel a bit more different because you see all the stories, laid out together. And I feel like the best Star Wars stories are a nice balance between both the Force stuff and the Rebellion stuff. And I feel like season 4 has done really well at that, personally. And I feel like we'll get a better sense of that next week when we get the finale, which will be heavily focused on this whole sort of battle and the traditional rebellion stuff. For me, I feel like it's a bit like when you watch Empire, and it's like you don't watch the Dagobah stuff and go, ugh, it's dragging. Can we go back to Hoth? It's a nice balance between it, and I feel like if it's just the two episodes we got with the Mortis stuff, I think that's nice, because even it's just about two episodes, Filoni, when he gets into the Force stuff, he's not tipping his toes into the water to see if it's cold. He's doing a double somersault dive into Thor stuff.
The deep dive. And,
exactly. And I feel like that's a nice little balance. Like, if most of the episodes are about the rebellion, and then you got these, like, Emperor Palpatine and time travel, it's like, okay, that's cool. I'm with that.
Yeah. About time travel, I feel... Let's get... Or I was just going to say, I feel like seasons 3 and 4 were actually pretty balanced in how they approached Force versus Rebels, because there were, you know, you had the establishment of the base, Mon Mothma, sort of the Zero Hour stuff and Mandalore and whatnot, and sort of the uprising, and then you also had, you know, Holocrons and Maul, and then, yeah, like everything Charlie said with 4, I thought they've done a pretty good job. But I think, yeah, like once the decision was made to put Jedi in the main cast of characters, I feel like they couldn't ignore the Force stuff. Like if they built the show around a cast of, you know, pilots or something, then I can see it'd be weird if they didn't focus on like just the sort of foundation and the growth of the rebellion. But once they decided that we're gonna have Force sensitive people who are gonna be, you know, hunted by other Force sensitive people, I feel like we were always going to get these sort of hardcore Filoni force jumps and whatnot.
Talking about Force jumps, what did you think about the whole, like this whole world between worlds, and the idea of like time travel and introducing this concept into Star Wars?
It makes sense to me, like. Of course, you know, with the Force being as powerful and as mysterious as it is, of course, there is a use for it in which you can go back in time or go forward in time and time travel. I mean, it sort of puts everything in a nice little bow of what the Emperor was after. You know, when he's talking about, I can even prevent the ones you love from dying. And we're thinking, oh, he, like, does some weird stuff with midichlorians or something. But it's really interesting to see that, oh, the Emperor has found a way, or has found out that you can manipulate the events of time through the Force and change them. And that's just, like, it makes so much sense to me. And it's so perfect. Chef kiss. Beautifully done. So I'm okay with it. To me, it's perfect. It makes sense.
I thought the introduction of Mortis was actually more jarring than this. like that was...
Yeah, I think if the Mortis arc, like, didn't exist, and if this was its own thing, I'd be okay with that, too.
Yeah, well, like, I sort of feel like it works because of Mortis, right? Like, we've established that there's some weird stuff out there that... it's hard to explain, and like I think that's what is making it sort of difficult for some people, because, you know, like as Star Wars fans, we want to be able to explain things. We want things explained to us by the people who write them, and, you know, we want to know all the details and how this works and blah blah blah. And then this is something where, like, it's just straight up asking you to believe, like guys, stop worrying about how this and this and this all work. Why isn't this this way, or like, why didn't they use it in this way? And it's kind of just like, yeah, this is here, and deal with that. Like, find a way to deal with that.
it's in your face, and you have to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you guys are talking about Mortis, and obviously a lot of Mortis is in this episode. In fact, you've seen the Mortis gods and the artwork, but actually, there were my favorite storyline from the Clone Wars. I feel like was referenced a lot. At the same time, which was the Yoda arc, which maybe I'm wrong, I'll have to go rewatch this, but I swear to God, if you watch those episodes, Qui-Gon basically can read the future, and that all just linked into the whole idea of like time travel and even like Force visions. Ever since, like, you know, Empire, that's time travel, just since in the future, like it's always been there. So the concept didn't really bother me. I mean, you know, time travel in Star Wars, it's always been like a, yeah, don't do that. But the way they did it, I think, worked.
It's almost less, Yeah, it's like almost less time travel. Like it's not like, oh, go in the time machine, right? But it's sort of like a, it's like a cutting corners of the continuity, right? Like it's not exactly turn back the clock.
Yeah, and
Which I
that's the
think,
thing. Like, I think what got people really angry, some people particularly on Twitter, which I disagree with, is the whole concept of like, oh, he's brought Ahsoka back to life. No,
She never died.
she never died,
That's not how time travel works.
and like that's not me being like pedantic. You literally didn't see her die. You go back, watch season two. The door closes. You don't see what happens. In fact, afterwards, you see her walking down the corridor. It was the what happened there that was interesting.
It's like that from Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, where Hermione Granger gets a time turner, and Buckwheat is about to get beheaded, and Hermione saves Buckwheat, and Hermione and Harry kind of like disappear in that hospital ward where Ron Weasley is, and then once Dumbledore shuts the door, Hermione and Harry are there again, and Ron's like, "What? What's going on?"
Exactly. It's the classic case. It's called the bootstrap paradox, which is the idea exists only exists because you created it. So, to use your example again, Prisoner of Azkaban, it's the bit where Professor Lupin turns into the werewolf, and then he runs away because he hears a werewolf screaming in the background, and later on Hermione decides to do it herself. It's because she heard herself do it in the first place. Because she heard herself do it in the first place. Loop, loop, loop. it's the same thing here. It's just Ezra saves Ahsoka because he thought that she died. But all in all, he saved her every time.
Yeah, she didn't really die. As soon as the door closed, Ezra was already there saving her.
Exactly. And that was a
Yeah, it's
concept
like
I thought was
the
really
same with
cool.
it's like the same with Jedi Knight, right? Like that episode played out the way it did because Ezra did not intervene. Like it's all happening at the same time. It's not really a case of Ezra lived that and then went back, even though he kind of did in the way we see it. It's more like, yeah, like the episode would have been different had Ezra done something, but he didn't. So last Monday proceeded the way it did because he didn't. It's trippy, but it's fun.
And it's really beautiful, the idea that Kanan, like his will lived on for the wolves and stuff, and he was there to teach him that lesson. What was trippy was that the whole Ezra, it wasn't until I rewatched the episode that I realized that the whole Kanan vision was a trick, and that the Emperor was doing it. Did you guys pick that up?
That the Emperor was the one leading Ezra to the temple?
That he was tricking Ezra into saving Kanan.
Oh. No, I didn't pick up on that. I'm gonna have to rewatch that.
Yeah, I didn't
What about
either.
you, Nikki?
No,
Explain.
I just assumed Ezra, that's what his mind went to. I didn't think the Emperor was manipulating him in any way.
Well, if you watch, obviously it's the same portal that Palpatine comes out of. It's the same portal that where Kanan was. And if you actually, I'll find the clip. If you hear, when the Emperor starts speaking, his voice is Freddie Prinze Jr. saying "perhaps," and then it changes to Ian McDiarmid.
Ooh.
Interesting. I'm gonna go back and rewatch.
Here.
Oh, that's messed up.
Interesting, yeah.
Man, Sheev,
Why
you
do you think
rascal.
Ahsoka can't go with them?
Because she, I assume it's because of like the time differential. Like he, I don't know. Maybe because she realizes that like she has to go her own path. I'm still convinced we'll see her next episode.
She don't want to.
I just want to take a nap. I'm just gonna go find a portal and take a nap.
Take my owl friend. Chill. Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what happens in the next episode because Charlie. I mean, you were just joking, but Ahsoka knows Anakin is Darth Vader.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, she has that knowledge. I mean, like, if she can't go with, like, I wonder what her thought process is with I can't go with you. Is she going to, like, find Obi-Wan Kenobi and, like, go into exile her own way? Or, you know, is she going to the Rebel Alliance to tell Mon Mothma, hey, I figured out the identity of Darth Vader? Like, she holds this knowledge in her hand that can change the course of the rebellion. But I'm just curious to see how they're going to explain that within these next few episodes, because now that she's alive, or she's always been alive, but now that she's like back at the forefront of the series, she has this knowledge of who Darth Vader is. And she's alive with that knowledge.
Yeah, I feel like, because obviously, we don't exactly know if she's going to be in the episode. Or, I mean, the idea that she says, I'll meet up with you again. And he says, yeah, please, we need it. is obviously, like, it's good enough. But also, Dave Filoni just changed his Twitter header to a piece of art of Ahsoka on a wolf with Rex. And I'm interested to see if that maybe those two characters go off together, because I feel like that'd be like a nice sort of ending for those two, like, they go off together and, you know, live their lives. I think that's maybe the lesson. Like, Ahsoka knows that she can't change what happened to Anakin, and she has to let him go.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of has that freedom again, the idea that he doesn't know that she's alive. The idea that Palpatine knows, he's like such a little shit. I think that's interesting enough. Maybe her and Ezra go off into that world again. Like, they might not just die, they might just, like, go within that world between worlds and live out their days, maybe. Or, like, she helps LaFol. I'm not exactly sure. I feel like, Kristen, down your logic hole, if we were going down that path. logic hole, sorry. Like,
she has this knowledge. She can literally march up to Mon Mothma or Bail Organa and say, hey, no big deal, but I was just at this, like, Sith temple, and Darth Vader kind of showed up, and we, like, started fighting, and, like, part of his mask came off, and I was like, oh, shit, that's Anakin Skywalker. So, Darth Vader is Anakin Skywalker.
But that's the thing. I feel like the one person she would tell is not Mon. I feel like the one person she would tell is Bell, and Bell already knows. So I feel like he would maybe, like, tell her not to tell anyone else, because, you know, he's keeping the secret.
Unless that's when he makes his little tape to Leia, when he puts in that little chest in Bloodline where he says, hey, yo, dad is Darth Vader.
And then,
exactly. Sorry about you.
Bail Organa kills Ahsoka to keep it a secret.
Oh! what a twist.
He shoves the owl down her throat. Suffocates
her. Oh, gosh.
You're gonna kill you're gonna kill the sister and Ahsoka in one swoop.
Yeah, and Bail Organa is secretly the strongest person in the galaxy.
Also, I like the idea that the Mortis gods are really good at rock, paper, scissors.
those hand signs.
Yeah.
They got them down.
Just Sam Witwer getting angry because he keeps doing rock.
I guess we didn't, like, explicitly say it yet, so I'll just point it out. How cool was it hearing voices from all eras? Like I, when I heard Jin first, I was like, oh, whoa, this is getting crazy. And then throw a little Kylo in there, throw some Rey in there, and yeah, and I was losing it.
Yeah, that was really cool. Like, it's sort of like that finality of that place being a pathway to different events, and, you know, that sort of being solidified through those different voices from characters that we know have yet to come in the Star Wars series. So that was really cool.
Yeah, it's
all happening.
All happening.
Right.
The whole concept of like time, and if it's linear, like, is it the future or is it happening, like, at the same time? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's the constant loop. That's why, like, the whole circle idea with the bridges and stuff. Are you going into the future, are you going to the past, or is it happening? Like, Ezra doesn't necessarily go back in time. He's just interacting with an event that happened that's happening.
Mr. Bridger of Time.
Time Bridger.
Those are the really special things when I feel like animation does it the most, where they really make it feel like one big story, and it's always really cool when they pull that off.
Yeah, it's all like one big thing, even though, like, you know, it's an animated show, it's still connected to these films. It's really beautiful to see and hear those voices. It like gave me goosebumps.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when you hear Alec Guinness's voice next to Stephen Stanton's impression, it's just amazing because it's so good.
Right.
Yes, that was so cool.
And you don't doubt it for a second. Like, the same character. Yeah, and there's like really cool prequel references as well. I just wish they would went like even further. You had like Yogurt from Spaceballs, and like, you know, like Kylo Ren's a punk bitch in the background.
All realities.
Yeah.
Just in the background, you hear, "I'm Matt, I'm the radar technician."
You hear Leia sing the holiday song.
There's really great parody potential with this scene. Just someone taking the footage and just putting in all sorts of sound clips from just whatever, any Star Wars anything. Just Robot Please Chicken.
Roll it.
Put some nice Watto quotes in there.
No, you won't. yeah, okay.
Lanny?
So
Lanny?
The finale. So the finale for Rebels is March 5th. Charlie, you said it was going to be like 3 episodes, or at least 2 long episodes.
I think it's 2 episodes and then a movie.
They dropped like a 90-minute. I think it's what they said, right? Like 90-minute finale or something.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know how they break it up.
Yeah. What are you hoping to see, like, how it closes out? I know we talked on it a little bit, but is there, like, one thing that you're really hoping to see at the end of all of this?
Thrawn dying. No, I'm joking.
No, he's not going to die. He's going to live forever.
I just like seeing these characters that we've seen all interact, like, come together. Like, seeing Wolf back and Gregor. And, you know, like, it's nice to have that little ending for everyone. Hondo, the Rebel gang, you know. For me, the best character in the show is Lothal. And even though people don't like Ezra, his relationship to the planet is so, like, I find it really interesting. I like the idea that he's like the protector of this planet, and this is what he's doing. Like, he's trying to win. The idea that they don't win is interesting, because obviously the Rebel Alliance didn't win against the Empire, unless they did like some sort of trick out where it's like, we're not technically the Rebel Alliance, which would be lame. But yeah, that's the sort of thing I'm excited about the most with the episode, and the idea of like maybe Ahsoka coming back and all that sort of jazz.
I want Thrawn to live. That's what I want.
Dun, dun, dun.
I want him to realize that Orson Krennic is going to, like, manipulate his way to getting what he needs done. And I want him to realize after the events of Lothal that the Emperor is no longer favoring Thrawn. And so I want him to realize that, oh no, he's in a weak spot and the Empire isn't going to help him with his mission. And so I want him to get the hell out of there.
Like, you just like
run.
Tasmanian devil's out of there.
He'll just be like, where's my Kalakori? And then he gets mad and runs away.
Starts crying.
Oh man. Yeah, the thing, something I want from the finale is the ending for World Between Worlds was, it was both like clear to me and also not clear. Like, I'm not 100%. It kind of felt like they shut it down, but I'm not sure if they did. So I kind of want just some double checking on the status of whether or not that temple is still active. And like, I'm not sure because I don't think we're done with the Emperor based off the trailer. It looks like there's still a scene where Ezra has some sort of confrontation with Palpatine, based off the mid-season trailer. So I get the feeling we're not quite done with the potential of the planet, and I'm looking forward to that. But otherwise, my only really like hope is that Sabine makes it out. That's really the only sort of ambiguous thing that I have hope for.
Yeah, because we know that Hera's going to be fine, mm-hmm. and Chopper will be fine too.
Right.
I feel like Zeb and Kallus might be the ones to go as well.
Yeah.
Based on the trailer.
Oh, yeah. One thing I've been thinking about is who I would prefer to take out, Governor Price. Like, yeah. I wonder if... Like, I have it down to Thrawn, Kallus, or Hera, and I don't know which one will be more satisfying.
Mm.
So...
Maybe
that's
they all
so
do
good.
They all at once. All three stab her.
At the same time. Yeah. And then they go their separate ways.
They shake firm handshakes, and then they leave.
Can we just, like, you know, be serious for a moment and just have a moment of silence for Minister Tua, who,
She knew.
She knew.
So sad.
Oh, Minister.
Rest in peace.
Just going back to that, I remember thinking at the time, I always thought she was talking about the Death Star. Yeah. I don't know, was that the bait?
I think that's what we assumed because mm-hmm. of the Kyber stuff.
Yeah, so it was kind of nice to be able to reflect upon that now and sort of how much bigger Lothal was for the dark side.
Also, it's just, we never actually said about how much it was cool hearing Ian McDermott back.
Oh, man. The big man himself.
It was dope. Well, guys, do you want to talk about questions or?
Yeah,
if anybody submitted questions.
So, our first question is from Andy Campbell, and he says, "Hey all, could we see future Star Wars movies include what we saw in the latest episode of Rebels? Traveling between space and time is something we've never seen before."
I feel like The Last Jedi kind of hinted at it in a weird way.
Yeah.
With Rey going into that little area in Octu, where there's like multiples of her.
Yeah.
For some reason, as soon as when I saw the world between worlds, I immediately thought of that. And like, is Lothal the only Jedi temple that has this? Are there other temples? Does someone have to be incredibly worthy to get into it? Like, what separates Ezra from the rest of the Jedi? You know, do we know if there are Jedi who have changed events other than Ezra Bridger saving Ahsoka? What if there were Jedi who came in, or Sith, and manipulated this for a time? You know, that would be my question.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know if it'll be brought up in the films, but I feel like there's a distinct connection, like you said about why didn't the Jedi use this. I feel like it's because Lothal was a temple, was an ancient temple, and, you know, like,
yeah,
obviously the early Jedi were more philosophical and more in tune with the Force, I think, than later generations, and more like had more connection with the Force priestesses and the Mortis gods, and the mm-hmm. idea that, you know, like, you could live on. That's obviously an ancient thing that the Jedi later discarded as sort of like nonsense. So I don't think that's why the later Jedi knew about it, but yeah, I think it's, but like you said, like, Rey has this whole experience on Octo, and Octo's the first Jedi temple, so it makes sense if there was a connection between those two planets. The same way, like, because this isn't the first, because like Andy says, like, we've never seen this before, but we've seen similar stuff to it. Obviously, you know, like, ancient temples with Octo, you know, we see that Ray and Ben, you know, like, communicating via different planes. We see her go through this whole sort of experience. But we also see, you know, Empire Strikes Back, Dagobah has, like, one of the most force-heavy planets. The whole cave sequence.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, yeah, that's true.
That's, like, a whole sort of similar experience. It's, like, strange and ethereal. It didn't happen, but it did happen. And in the same place, like, you know, Luke, this is the future. So, I don't think the specific room will be seen again. I feel like there's a reason why the temple collapses and disappears. The gateway is closed. And I feel like the whole point in the last lesson was so Ezra could stop the Emperor from manipulating this sort of technique, closing it off for good, which I think is an interesting concept. Maybe we can see it again one day, but I don't think we'll see it in a film. What about you, Nikki?
I think, like you said, probably this specific idea, I don't believe so, but I mean, who's to really know? you know, in 10 years we could be getting all sorts of different things, but yeah, I think I like the idea of sort of lost knowledge, like we were talking about, like these ancient temples that even the order that itself forgot about, and I like the idea that some things sort of stay lost also. And then, yeah, like the sort of crazy mysticism I think will always be around, but yeah, I'd have a hard time thinking about a film story that that gets into this kind of stuff. Maybe because I feel just based on the experience so far, animation is the one that is more allowed to take these really kind of wonky trips. But that could all change with, 5-10 more years of Star Wars films, and people start getting a little bolder in what they want to do as far as what they visually show and, you know, weird sort of continuity manipulation stuff. But yeah, we'll see.
We've got a second question from Mark P, who asks, should Ezra die? I hope they give him a heroic exit. He's never become as beloved as Ahsoka, in my opinion, and honestly needs to go out with a bang. Unless, of course, he goes on to be something else. Unless he goes on to be something else of importance. But I guess we'll wait and see. Do you think Ahsoka, Ezra should die?
I don't know. I mean,
I honestly don't care. Like, that's not in like I don't care about Ezra way, but I just don't have a preference. I trust that he's going to have a fulfilling ending, whatever it is.
Yeah, I trust Filoni with that.
Yeah. So whether he lives, I believe he'll accomplish what he needed to accomplish for the show. And if he dies, then I feel the same way. So should is not really the way I'm thinking about it. I just want his last piece to be, you know, the right fit. And yeah, I mean, you can get into all sorts of sort of, you know, questions of where was he in this time and blah, blah, blah. And so it sort of feels like he should die because he's not around. But yeah, I think the more important thing is what he accomplishes, whether he lives or dies. So yeah, I really don't have a preference as far as his alive status goes.
I that's a good question, because if Ezra lives, where are they going to put him? And if he dies, where are they going to put that? If that makes sense. So I don't know. Like, I don't know what Ezra's fate should be exactly.
I feel like for me personally, it's going to be like, because the whole idea that he can't be around because he's the Jedi. I don't know if he'll be a Jedi anymore. I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if he turns into, like, one of the wolves. Or at least becomes, like, sort of a person that represents the wolves. Remember one of the episodes that just aired? I think this episode is, Are They On Our Side? And Ezra says they're on the Force side. I feel like that's how he will come across. He'll let Hera and all that lot deal with the galaxy, but for him personally, it's going to be about protecting his home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can see Ezra sort of staying behind and just not journeying with Hera and them. Like maybe him not necessarily giving up his Jedi type powers, but him just saying, you know, my fight is still here. I have to guard this temple. I have to make sure that, you know, if the rebellion loses, I can still be the last line of defense against the Emperor.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be cool if he has to stay on the inside, or at least just like,
yeah.
Do you know what I'm thinking of? I'm thinking of The Last Crusade.
Oh, like the knight.
Interesting.
Like the knight.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to protect it.
That's yeah. Cool. I mean, it goes back to, I think the Occupation episode where he straight up says, like, I'm not leaving until, you know, this planet is safe. Like, so in Ezra's mind, you know, the rebellion is already sort of in the back window. You know, they got their little assault force to come and try, but, you know, that didn't go through. And I think, yeah, he's gonna pull through for whatever's best for his home world. And, you know, like you were saying, sort of him becoming almost like the spirit of Lothal or combining with the wolves. Like that's backed up, I think, because you get that last shot of the trailer with him with the lightsaber and the wolves behind him. And you know, I get the feeling they're going to be, like put together in some way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's probably the most likely ending. And I feel like he has an importance in the story because, as much as Ahsoka, because I feel like, you know, the connection between those two characters, and I think it's a cool little way of, you know, seeing it out. Our last question is from Ian Coe, who actually asks a few things in one question. What did you think of Luke apparently not being represented by the disembodied voices?
Very interesting. Maybe because if this time is not linear type thing, and the events that are happening in The Last Jedi, The Force Awakens, and after Return of the Jedi are happening at the same time as A New Hope, things like that, since Luke has cut himself off from the Force, maybe he's cut himself off from whatever this is, and since the World Between Worlds is this Force constructed mechanism or tool, since Luke has cut himself off from it, like, maybe that has some implication as to why you can't, or supposedly cannot hear him in this.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, actually. I never even thought about that Luke wasn't featured in the hall of significant characters. Yeah, that is interesting.
Was he not heard of?
I can't recall any.
I remember hearing like Jin, Rey, Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe not. I just like the idea, like, everyone has like a really cool quote. Like, yeah.
but I want to go to the Tashi station.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, like,
that's the one.
Yeah.
All you hear is, like, the Force binds the galaxy together.
Luminous beings, are we?
I care.
Does it have something to do with the like, Luke's journey is one of, sort of like Ezra, like, not knowing anything? So, like Luke doesn't have any, like, really profound words until The Last Jedi. So that sort of does sort of feed into that idea that Kristen had about maybe it just having to line up with when he was cut off or whatever.
I really like the idea you said, Kristen, about the cutting off from the Force. That's a really cool, like, he's put his phone on mute.
Yeah. You're not getting any quotes from me tonight, and, guys.
I'm out. And like, since time is sort of non-existent in this void, And everything sort of happening at the same time. You know, Luke cutting himself off from the Force is happening at the same time he's training to become a Jedi.
I'd buy that.
So maybe that has something to do with it.
Yeah. That'd be an interesting question if someone asked that to someone tweet at Rebels Recon and get that answered. Because I would like to, that'd be a fascinating sort of question. Why, like, sort of, if any thought went into omitting Luke, why that happened? Yeah, good question.
It's weird as well that we didn't hear Yaddle.
Ah, poor Yaddle.
Justice for Yaddle.
Do you think she cut herself away from the Force as well?
She was like, screw this. I will, okay, bringing up Yaddle made me think of Qui-Gon Jinn. And I will, Qui-Gon is one of my favorite, actually, top three favorite Jedi.
Nice.
From the get-go, he was questioning the Jedi Council, calling them out on their bullshit, and they were like, no, you can't be a part of the Council because you're too radical.
Too Irish.
And he's too Irish. And wow, they're racist. He's the one that unlocks the secret of being a Force ghost. He trains himself. He is chosen, because I think the Clone Wars establishes that, you know, not every single Jedi can become a Force ghost. You have to get chosen for it. If I remember that correctly, no, I could be correct. Wrong, but he's chosen for it. He understands these deeper secrets of the Force that the Jedi Council are too chicken to discover. You know, is Mace Windu a Force ghost? No, he isn't. Ki-Adi Mundi? No, he ain't. Where's he at?
He did.
So all of these Jedi Council people talking shit about Qui-Gon Jinn, and he's the one that's on top. Qui-Gon, get it. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah. No, it's true. Like, that's the beauty of Qui-Gon, right? Like, because he was so... the Order had already lost its way when, you know, he was going strong. And he knew. And that's why he got to do all the cool stuff. Like, it reminds me of From a Certain Point of View chapter where he's talking to Obi-Wan. And he sees into the future. Like, he knows Luke's journey. He knows Obi-Wan's journey, right? So Qui-Gon's been on this stuff for quite a while.
Heck yeah.
I feel like a lot of people should learn from Qui-Gon when it comes to spoilers.
Or he sees into the future. I don't know. I feel like if Qui-Gon would have been like, hey, this Anakin guy, I think I'm going to leave him on Tatooine. he's a chosen one. But...
Save the galaxy, you know. What's a few dead kids?
What's a few dead kids for the galaxy?
Yeah, you know what I mean?
can you imagine Qui-Gon, like, walking through the world between worlds? And goes back to Naboo and doesn't save Jar Jar.
Oh, God.
Don't touch anything.
And...
I like the idea.
Okay, what if Qui-Gon is in the world between worlds. Everybody get your fanfic notes ready, because I'm going to write this fanfiction for you. Qui-Gon's in the world between worlds, right?
Yeah.
And he saves Shmi from dying.
Whoa.
And him and Shmi go off and do their own thing.
And they leave their daughter in the future on Jakku. Oh, shit!
What? They take her, somebody through...
Somebody write this fanfic.
They take her to the world between worlds and drop her off in the Jakku portal.
Exactly. Yeah. And then they buy a drink.
You know, I don't know if I mentioned this before on a podcast episode, but when I was a kid watching The Phantom Menace, I always got that Qui-Gon Shmi vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know what exactly it was, but...
What, that like, they banged?
Or like that they were like somewhat into each other.
They were.
Were they? Is that like an actual thing? I thought people were just joking about that.
I think I'm pretty sure.
I'm willing to bet that they were into each other.
They definitely banged that night.
Before the race?
Totally.
Yeah.
When she gives that look in the door.
Shmi was stressing out.
Like,
Qui-Gon needed to relieve that stress.
Like, why are you talking about my son? But I'm hot for you.
Ooh, Qui-Gon.
Well, thanks for those questions, everyone. It's always nice to get some stuff from you. Oh, there's still more. Okay, let's do this.
It's still from Ian. It's if you had the ability to go into the world between worlds and change an event in Star Wars, what would you change and why?
Oh, shit.
Well, no, he's one. Oh, man.
Okay, what's he got?
Or Heath will probably just go back and make Zuvio appear.
Well,
oh
yeah.
yeah, make Zuvio more relevant. I would, if I was in the world between worlds, I would rescue Padme and have her at the forefront of the rebellion because
Dope.
I love Padme Amidala and I want her to be in everything. The end.
Fair.
That's really cool.
Man.
What about you, Nikki?
I'm trying to think. I'm trying to think like if there are any like grave injustices I feel like need to be addressed in Star Wars. I can't really think of any right now, so I'll just say I would tell Tally not to go in the hangar for another 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And then
I wouldn't go in there.
Be like, Tally,
go
just
into the toilet.
Tally, take some Dulcolax and hang out in the bathroom.
It saves lives.
Yeah, and just wait it out. And then you lose your A-Wing, but you can still hang out. So that's where I'll go for now. But I may think about this some more.
I feel like I just like go to Jakku when Kylo Ren's interrogating Poe and just pants him.
Poe or both?
No, Ben. And like, but like quickly jump out of the way and disappear again. But you get to see it, what, how it happened. Like, and he's like, what?
Would that be an effective embarrassment, though? Because he's got that long cloak that sort of hides the rest of his, you know, his lower body.
That's true. And he's thick, so.
Mm-hmm.
Super thick.
But no, that's your power, though. You do what you want to do with it. Don't make me dissuade you from pantsing Kylo Ren if that's your destiny.
I've got an idea. So when I watched the episode, I thought what something was really cool is that when Vader tries to kill Ahsoka and she disappears, you see like a glimpse of him going, huh? Like, you know, like he's like confused.
What?
And, what? When you see him in A New Hope and he kills Ben, he disappears. And he has to step on the killer because he's like, not again, like, what the fuck? What is it with these people that just keep disappearing? So I'd trick Vader. I'd like, make a little, like, a tiny Ben Kenobi figure and put it underneath the cloak. So he thinks that he's shrunk.
Ooh, okay.
just to fuck Vader.
Just to, like, quickly go back to, when you're talking about the Ahsoka battle. Sort of getting the conclusion of that. That was like Snape tears in Deathly Hallows, like level surreal for me. I don't know if you guys got that too, but like seeing that battle continue was like, oh my gosh.
So for me, my biggest issue with season 2 finale was that door closing and not seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like Filoni retrospectively made me like it.
Yeah.
It's like, one day you get into the door. It's like, cool, thanks. I like it now.
Yeah, it was really cool to get that again. I didn't really have a negative reaction to how it happened originally in Twilight Apprentice, but I think it's definitely worth getting that. And I do feel like that was the plan. I've seen a few people who are like kind of cynical about all the motivations of these episodes. But I do feel like, I know he did say that there was, you know, he felt a greater urgency to address it because of the fan reaction, but I think he's been cooking this up for basically the whole time.
Yeah, pretty much.
I agree with that.
So yeah, that's basically our thoughts on the, you know, Rebel stuff going on. We'll be back next week, obviously, to talk about the finale. It feels weird, the finale of Star Wars, because like I said earlier, this is the first sort of new story in this new era, and it's coming to a close. It's going to be weird. I wonder if we'll find out about another animated series.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, actually, do you guys think they'll tease it in any way in the finale?
I don't know.
I wonder. I don't know. That's a good question.
Secrets revealed.
It wasn't Edge to just pop in the future and find out.
Yeah, let me hop into my world between worlds.
Do you reckon he uses that like to flirt with people? Yeah, I've got a world between worlds. That's all we've got time for this week. You can follow us on Twitter at ImpSnitPod. You can email us at ImperialSnitPod@gmail.com. And you can talk to us separately. I'm on Twitter at CMWASHBY. Guys, plug your stuff.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Kristen K. Bates. That's KRISTEN, the correct way to spell it.
And you can find me on Twitter at Naquicious. It's NAQUICIOUS. Or you can also join the Star Wars Podcast Alliance and I think catch us on Facebook there.
Okay, well, we'll be back next week to talk more stuff and diarrhea, I think. Was that what we're talking about
today? Take care of your bowel movements, guys.
Please, please.
Godspeed, Rebels.
Or last week.
Godspeed.
Well, no. However time works. See ya.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Dissolve the council permanently. The last remnants.